Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View on Monday evening, February 28th. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour as I put my take on things and my interpretation of current events, of history, of economics, of music. So I'm glad to be back, and I always like to thank BBS Radio for defending our First Amendment rights and putting their philosophy, I guess, where their mouth is, or their money where their mouth is, because I enjoy the freedom to say the things I need to say, the things that need to be said. I have no Zionist masters. I am not beholden to the military-industrial complex. I'm a proponent of individual rights, sound money, as in the gold standard. In fact, having a part two discussion with a friend, Andy, who will be calling in soon. We spoke about the gold standard last week in a sort of a free-range discussion on other things, which we'll again do this evening, because a lot of things are interconnected. And we're going to talk about the oil situation too, oil prices, because I think something that's been left out in this discussion about higher oil prices is inflation. That is the creation of more money out of thin air, making our dollars worth less. Consequently, the more enlightened people overseas, probably OPEC and other countries, realize that the value of the dollar continues to plunge, makes our dollars worth less. So this plays a role. And of course, prices don't all rise uniformly. They're affected differently. And of course, quite often producers start to raise prices in anticipation of other price hikes from suppliers or the effects of inflation, which is too many dollars chasing after fewer goods and services. In fact, as I understand it, and I heard this a couple years ago, read this a few years ago, that, for example, Iraq and Iran, notice I don't pronounce them Iraq and Iran, or Italian. Anyway, Iraq and Iran, were interested in using euros or other currencies as their main trading currencies instead of the dollar, because they see what's happening to the dollar. The Fed keeps destroying the value of the dollar. The government continues to spend more money, print more money, create more money, borrow more money. Meanwhile, our geniuses in Congress are seriously engaged in discussion and debate of how to cut the deficit, how to cut the budget. So they've managed to cut $4 billion here and a couple billion there, and that's big news for them. I've been calling for the longest time to get rid of the drug war, to stop defending our rich allies, Western Europe, South Korea, Japan. They're meddling in Colombia. So there's no need to spend all this money on a huge foreign policy that's bankrupting our country in spite of this ridiculous crap that the neocons give us by way of Krauthammer and Bill Kristol, their toxic garbage that they spew about national greatness or American greatness, as if we're supposed to police the world, especially now when the country's bankrupt. I mean, they would have us attack Iran. They would have us attack these other countries as if we've got the manpower, the money, as if it's even constitutionally allowed. And then, of course, the neocons have infiltrated the Tea Party. I knew this would happen. I mean, I saw it even before the election. The neocons being Israeli firsters, and they're into this empire building, and they're pro-war, and they try to intimidate folks by saying, well, if you don't support war, you know, you're not for America, you're not for our troops. And most of these people have never been in the military. They're just chicken hawks now who don't mind encouraging politicians to use our military in their own private wars. Again, I don't think our troops are defending our freedom at this point, or even actually before. They're out there protecting a globalist empire. Yet they're sworn to the Constitution, but the Constitution doesn't call for an empire. I would love to point this out to talk radio and Fox News. They pay lip service to it. Again, lip service, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, they pay lip service. But if really confronted with what the Constitution says and what it does not say, what it does not call for, what it does not allow, then, you know, their back's against the wall, which is why they don't take too many libertarian phone calls or independents, because they want their comfort zone. They're good with liberals and socialists, although sometimes they're one and the same. But, yeah, they don't like libertarians or individualists or strict constitutionalists, because it throws a wrench in their gears, and they don't like the hypocrisy of having to debate it and deal with it. So this is something that I notice, and something I'm found of that Lou Rockwell said was that is that the problem with so many conservatives is that they hate the left more than they hate the state, and they hate the left more than they love liberty and freedom. You got that out there? You folks picking this up? And by the way, I always welcome calls. I welcome debate. I welcome inquiry. I welcome criticism. As long as you know, you need to be ready for a scathing rebuttal. And by the way, Seth, just cut in when my guest arrives, although there'll be no red carpet for this man. So anyway, we've got, you know, more problems in the Middle East. Gaddafi's under the illusion that he's going to retain power. I'm sure he'll probably be driven out soon, but unfortunately, unlike Egypt and Tunis, with more bloodshed and, you know, aiming his troops at his own people, which reminds me of the importance of the Oath Keepers here in our country, which I hope are ex-military and are currently serving servicemen and women will never violate the Constitution oath they took. They will never fire on the American people if we end up protesting or resisting more government power, if we resist the FEMA camps that they say don't exist, all these sort of things. I urge people who are in the military or police, retired or active duty, to get with the Oath Keepers and realize that you took an oath to defend the Constitution, not to be loyal to whatever government happens to be in power. Don't confuse patriotism with loyalty to the government. I don't, nor should you. Again, my patriotism is to the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. It's what we have to work with now. Yes, they're imperfect documents, especially the Constitution with its two, dare I say, horrific, how tragic, the Commerce Clause and the Welfare Clause, which have been manipulated beyond belief, beyond reason. You know, and you've got, what, half the politicians are lawyers? You know, the Supreme Court, they're all lawyers. Obama's a lawyer. Clinton was a lawyer. Bush probably wasn't smart enough to be a lawyer or finish law school. Not that lawyers are smart. They might be good lawyers. They might be good further legislating or throwing wrenches into gears through more regulation and such. But as far as good managers or statesmen or leaders, we don't need any more lawyers. And when somebody tells me their kid's going to law school or their kid's a lawyer, I mean, sorry, I'm not sorry. I'm not impressed. You know, I'd rather have their kid be a doctor, engineer, or scientist. So many lawyers have over-litigated our whole country. What have they done to get rid of the drug war? Lawyers have children. Don't they realize their kids are put at risk by the drug war? Just the fact that a stray bullet could hit them in an area that's not even necessarily crime-ridden? Once again, I mentioned this last week. I read a couple weeks ago, actually last month, that a Federal Border Patrol agent down somewhere, maybe Texas, Arizona, had said in conversation with another agent or a supervisor that, you know, if we just get rid of this drug war, we wouldn't have all these problems. Well, lo and behold, he's been fired. But thank goodness he's fighting back. Normally I take issue with what the particular reasons are an employee wants to get his job back, especially if, you know, I believe he's been in the wrong based on breach of contract or behavior or, you know, things he may have said. But this border agent is on the right path. I wish he'd go public. I wish he'd become a big nuisance to the feds and go down the path of ending drug prohibition, educating himself, oneself about this, speaking out, trying to get his fellow employees or former employees hip to what's going on. Because, I don't know, this stuff can't be maintained. It seems like it's going to crash down. It's such a drain on our resources. But again, the main people who are addicted to the drug war, and that's the cops, the politicians, and the bureaucrats, all the extra money they receive for fighting the evil drug pushers and the drug war, the asset forfeitures, which is a horrific way to steal our property, you know, the drug war exception to the Fourth Amendment. So we have some serious problems here, folks, and I wouldn't mind a revolution in this country based on liberty and property and peace. Not like what's going on in the Middle East, but against big government, big unions, corporate welfare, corporate socialism, state capitalism, all this mess that's been brought to us by the federal government, causing us to pay higher prices, losing more of our freedoms, more of our rights. How ridiculous it is when you fly nowadays, how insulting it is to go through their cancer machine and or being pat down. So we're losing so much, and people complain about it, and they send their cute little emails or their on political commentary. But meanwhile, so many of these people think that the Republican Party and the Tea Party is going to save them when they can't be reformed. Although I volunteer to lead the Tea Party and really put it on its Jeffersonian constitutional path and foundation, because now it's heavily infiltrated by the pro-war, pro-empire neocons who've schmoozed Republicans and other Tea Party members to, you know, they've infiltrated with their ideas and whatnot. I have an interesting story I read about 2 days ago about Sarah Palin and how she was chosen, selected, and how Bill Kristol pushed her quite a bit from when he first met her, and how this all came down. And again, she speaks in empty platitudes. You know, she sounds patriotic. She says stuff that people who don't look further seem to understand. You know, Constitution and our rights, and put America first, and our military. But she's, you know, she's a pro-war neocon. I'll explain a little bit later how she got this way. I know that many conservatives and Republicans think that she's just wonderful, but I don't. I think that she's not well educated in terms of economics, political economy, world history, world geography. She's quite clueless about these sort of things, and these aren't things you just can't cram. So that's something that I've always noticed about her. I saw Bill Maher the other day, and he had Cornel West on, who's a black American, Afro-American, whatever, social sort of, I don't know, intellectual, philosopher, educator, commentator, teacher. And I like what he said about keeping the word nigger in Mark Twain's writings, just like he wouldn't change any of John Coltrane's work because there might be a couple bad notes or this is in the wrong place. He would keep the integrity of that, the writing and or the music. But what he said even more importantly, which I picked up on right away, was he praised Mark Twain for his anti-imperialism, his anti-war stance, and his anti-racism. And I like Mark Twain. He's not a hardcore libertarian per se, but he respected individual rights. He questioned religion and authority. He was kind of a curmudgeon, and he liked his cigars, probably his whiskey, little beer, I don't know, but he's the kind of guy I like, sort of like from the old right. I think of the old right as people who are more fiscally conservative or responsible, but they were non-interventionist. They were not pro-war. I wish they would have gotten rid of prohibition a lot sooner, which they could have done, I think, the old right, if they were behind it, especially because Republicans were in office in the 20s, Harding and Coolidge. By the way, Harding and Coolidge were, in retrospect, and I've said this for a while now, based on the best I could research about them, was that despite their faults, we all have them, even PK, that in retrospect, Harding and Coolidge were probably the two best presidents of the 20th century because of what they didn't intervene with, because of what they stayed out of the way with. There is a take on things. And, of course, in the 19th century, and of course, the last good Democrat was Grover Cleveland, who was a lawyer but had a clue about fiscal management. And, he says something like, it's not the duty of the government to support the people, in other words, through taxes for a welfare state, but it's the people's duty to support the government. Now, he wrote that, you know, probably over 100 and some years ago, but I take that to mean it's the people's duty to support the government, not as just mindlessly and blindly, but just enough micro tax revenue to comply with the functions of government. And I think Andy is here. We're not worthy, people of the world. Are you out there, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, but more importantly, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you there. I heard you burp just a minute ago. I thought that was kind of funny.
You did?
Yeah.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. But perhaps a burp is better than flatulence.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was, you know, reminiscent of a Howard Stern show for just a second. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I have some of the Howard Stern qualities as far as the way I talk about openly racism or this and that. I'm not afraid to say things that, you know, and I like the humor mixed in. But there is a definition of a burp is flatulence that took the elevator. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I like to kind of liken myself to W.C. Fields. You know, I hate all people equally. Or, I'm racist against all races, including myself.
Yeah, but most of all, you look a bit like Fields and you have his nose. And you don't even
No, I had it worked on it. I went to one of those infamous doctors in New York, you know, that they work with racial groups. So they made my nose smaller.
You don't even drink much. Well, I'm talking about red, his red nose and the bulbous part of it. But the fact that, regardless of the fact that you look a bit like W.C. Fields, this thing about...
Yeah, tall, good looking. Well, that's before he gained all that weight, but yeah.
Yes, well, you have too. But anyway, you are familiar with the gold standard. In spite of your weight gain, you're hip to the gold standard and sound money. And the question I have this week is, I read something the other day or two about, or it was a brief video clip of Ron Paul speaking about, and I don't recall if it's this year or last year when it was that I saw this clip from or read from, but he was saying, like, when you compare the higher prices and the higher cost in oil in dollars, the gold price remains constant.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Can you explain that a little further?
Well, the gold, I mean, it's like they say, gold isn't going up in value. The dollar's going down in value.
Correct.
It's not that the gold's becoming worth more. The dollar's becoming worth less. It's the same with oil. Oil would pretty much stay pretty standard. I mean, besides the fact that we possibly hit peak oil, you know, the supply could be dropping here. At least cheap oil is disappearing. There's tons of oil. It's just the price you're willing to pay to get it out of the ground. Gold is a constant. It's long been known that gold. What would they used to say? 1 ounce of gold will buy a nice men's suit. Well, what is a nice men's suit called? It used to be, you know, $20 would buy you a really heck of a nice suit, and now it's and then what? 10 years ago, $300 would buy you a decent suit. Actually, it even wouldn't buy you that nice of a suit. Nowadays, if you want a really nice gentleman's suit, you're going to pay $1,500 to $2,000 for it.
Yeah.
That's the suit. That's the coat, the pants, the shirt, the tie. You know, you're going to be completely set up. You know, you're going to start looking at something like an Armani suit, something along those lines.
Well, regardless of the price of a suit and even a tuxedo, I happen to look very good in a suit, and especially a tuxedo. And I spent a good part of my life in a tuxedo when I worked on cruise ships, and then the rest of the day I was in
wingtips?
Shorts.
Those are those black and white wingtips.
Well, that also augmented and beautified my outfit, but I would spend like the evenings in a tuxedo and then during the days in shorts.
Oh.
I'm glad you're still there. So anyway,
yeah.
Back to
even
oil.
In Alaska? Yeah.
Yes, I'll get to that. So the price of oil pretty much, in terms of gold, has stayed pretty much, I don't want to say, what's the word? Steady, but
a steady ratio.
And the price of, and in terms of dollars, it's gone up because the value of the dollar is so much less and it requires more dollars to buy the same barrel of oil, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Now, this is not something they're talking much about. They're you know, it's a convenient way for them to blame the Middle East trouble on the oil supply. But we only get like 25% of our oil from the Middle East. And
yeah, it's even that these days. Most of our oil comes from Canada and Mexico.
And Venezuela. So last time I checked, those three nations, they're not overthrowing their Muslim governments.
No, not at all.
So do you see this as a convenient New World Order or a federal government ploy, the higher oil prices? Because it's not, again, is this trouble in the Middle East and with Libya, who Italy gets most of their oil, which I kind of thought anyway, since they were formerly colonized by Italy. But isn't this really the situation more of the inflation than it is the oil companies trying to cash in, per se?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think it's a combination of inflation as well as higher demand and lower supply. You know, it's a simple supply-demand situation. China is just, you know, they're ravenous for natural resources right now, and they're beginning to import more and more oil. You know, they don't produce a lot of it. They're making deals with Iran. They're making deals in Africa. They're making deals all over. I think we talked about this a little bit last week.
Yeah, but I heard you say you don't know if it's peak oil. I pretty much totally reject the nonsensical term peak oil after what I learned several years ago about – if I'm a disciple of Dr. Thomas Gold, who says that oil is not a fossil fuel. Oil is constantly being produced by the Earth's mantle, and if you drill deep enough, you'll find it. And Russia's on the leading edge of deep oil technology.
Okay. And plus, you know, Brazil, they're saying they found these huge, vast oil fields off the coast. But of course, it's like what? You know, how many miles down? Like 30 miles down or something?
Well, that's in terms of what Russia's into. I mean, deep oil drilling could be anywhere, I mean, 30 maybe to 60 miles, but you'll pretty much find it. And so the way I see it, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, that there is plenty of oil while we work for alternatives, and that there is not peak oil. We're not running out of it. And as I understand it, petrol is burned even more cleaner nowadays. Gasoline burns more cleaner than it did, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Things are more efficient. So I'm thinking there's plenty of oil until we find other alternatives, which we should still be looking for, but they shouldn't be subsidized.
Right. There's plenty of oil, just not plenty of readily available. It's not cheap oil anymore, which, as you know, America was built upon cheap sources of energy.
Well,
and cheap transportation.
It may be, or it could be, cheaper oil, depending on how they went about it. I mean, oil is also more expensive because we're supposedly defending the Middle East. We're, you know, when you, if you figure in the price of the military-industrial congressional complex, oil is quite expensive. I heard that in Afghanistan, it's essentially like $400 a gallon.
Wow, I didn't know
that's what it costs the military. By the time it's trucked in and everything, it's something like $400 a gallon. And, you know, and you know what? Lousy mileage those Humvees get, and tanks. So it takes a lot.
How efficient the government is at doing things. You know how cheaply they usually do things. You know,
takes a lot. Pushing Obama. Well, just to bring it in that country. I mean, they don't have much there. You know, they're still kicking around in that you know, third world country. That's they're content to wait things out and hit Uncle Sam, hit and run, and just, you know, drain us. And they're doing
like
a pretty good job.
Afghanistan is the land that will test the faithful.
That's right.
You know, how long can you last? Because it can last a long time.
Well, yeah, longer than us. I mean, you know, they already live in a society that, with no oil, in the sense that I don't think they have much electricity or, you know, electrical power. But it's a feudalist system. It's a tribal system, and they're going
to
wait it out. They're tough warriors, and, you know, they'll take Uncle Sam out one at a time, I guess.
That's it. Just wait and be patient.
You know, I wish our poor troops understood this. I wish they were studying it or up on it. Of course, the military, who is out there supposedly defending our rights, including the right to free speech, they have systematically closed or shut down a lot of websites that our troops can't have access to that would inform them to important alternative information as to what's going on.
And also to allow information to get out about what's happening to them.
Exactly, exactly.
Because that cover has been blown by some whistleblowers coming out of the military.
All right. It's a shame what they're doing to Bradley Manning now, this poor young fellow who exposed some of this stuff last year. He's been, I think he's in, he was in Guantanamo, and he's not even a Muslim. And then he's in North Carolina or somewhere. You know, that's Muslims only in Guantanamo.
About him, talking about how he didn't do anything. He wasn't seditious, or he wasn't a traitor. He was doing exactly what he was told, what he was trained to do. You know, seek out traitors, seek out sedition, and he exposed it.
And what you're talking about Bradley Manning?
Yeah, Bradley Manning.
Well, he's a hero. And the worst thing about how they were sort of torturing him in the sense, or how he was treated by not allowed any exercise. If he was seen exercising, they had to intervene, the guards. I mean, it read some horrific things the way he's being treated. You know, if I was Obama right now, I would pardon him. Not that he's been guilty of anything. I would just pardon him, get him out of the damn grasp of the military and the CIA.
Yeah, but Fred, this is change you can believe in. PK?
PK knows that he doesn't trust the feds at all. And you know, each administration is usually worse than the last one. You know, Bush is worse than Clinton. Obama's worse than Bush. Clinton was a lot less destructive than Bush. The neocons tried to get him to invade Iraq, but he wouldn't. Unfortunately, he kept that damn embargo in place, which, you know, led to the death of, they say, 500,000 Iraqi kids. And that idiot, Madeleine Albright, former camp survivor, or her family was in the so-called Holocaust, and she thought it was justified to cause the deaths of 500,000 kids.
Yeah.
She's on record for saying that.
You know, you got to crack some eggs, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're going to make an omelet. Wow.
It's too bad her eggs are... wherever cracks. Anyway, so we have that genius Sarah Palin, that patriotic genius, militarist Sarah Palin. Turns out that a few years ago, well, prior to the election in 2008, I think it happened in 2007, the neocons had a cruise up in Alaska. And when they a chartered cruise, and when they stopped, I don't know if it was Juneau, if it was Ketchikan, somewhere like that, she had been invited to come aboard, and they had lunch with her, and they further groomed her. And ever since then, Bill Kristol, prior to the election, was tooting his horn for Sarah Palin. So she was essentially, you know, an airhead about foreign policy and foreign countries, for that matter. And they sort of guided her along and nurtured her along. So she would make a great, you know, puppet front person. She sang that usual patriotic kind of crap that, you know, the masses buy into with no specifics.
Yeah.
Empty platitudes, yes. She might as well be a duckbill platitude.
Yeah. Straight from my
ass. Thank you very much. So, but anyway, I that's what I read, and I wasn't shocked to read it. I thought, how convenient. These damn neocons, they go up there, they bring her into their web, and you see the results.
Yeah, you know, to me, she's just another mouthpiece. She talks and talks and talks. I mean, they should put her and Obama in a room together and see who falls over first.
Why don't they put them both on Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah.
Since her daughter is such a brilliant dancer, because I ain't heard much about her daughter lately. I forget her name, but...
Yeah, and the boyfriend.
Well, he's moved on, thank goodness. I didn't think that would ever work. I mean, they reconciled supposedly last year or something, and that's a party again. But actually, I don't really care about Governor Palin's daughter. I'm more concerned about Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, what a tragedy. What are we going to do?
Well, we should stand outside the courthouse and pray for her.
Well, yeah, and we could throw, like, promise roses over the fence, you know, once she's in.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Maybe, if you bring her one of the King James and give it to her.
We can pay for her rehab. Speaking of rehab, yeah. I like Charlie Sheen's little rant today, the way he defended himself and stood up. Did you hear that?
I'm all for him. I think more of these, you know, the Hollywood types should do that kind of stuff. Just speak
I like
up,
Charlie.
Stop being such cowering idiots.
You know, I wish I could contact him. I wish, you know, I'd like to be a friend of his. I wish I could be his Karl Rove because we could change the world. He is a 9/11 truther. He is a friend of liberty. He does private charity. He doesn't bring a lot of attention to himself in that. Yeah, he likes the girls. I mean, my advice to Charlie is, Charlie, have your girls. That's all cool. But don't drink. Don't use hard drugs. Just smoke pot. Just do that. And work out. Get a lot of exercise so you can handle these girls. And you know, just behave yourself.
Sure. Why not? I mean, they should take him and put him in a room with Sean Penn and slap each other about, you know? Maybe he can, you know, straighten that guy out.
Of course.
I mean, totally different subject, but yeah, you know. But yeah, I'm all for Charlie Sheen. I liked what he had to say today. I heard just a couple of things on the news where they were interviewing him. I was like, yeah, finally, somebody's not saying,
I'm
sorry, please forgive me, it wasn't my fault, I'm going to go into rehab again. You know.
He deflected most of it, and I'd like to take him at his word because it sounds like that he has trained himself or he was able to walk away from his addictions on his own, which a person can do if they're strong enough. I don't know if it'll last, but he's just got to, you know, cool it with any of the violence towards the chicks, you know. That should be safe for behind closed doors, little rational domination, little spanking here and there, you know, but nothing beyond all that, you know.
As long as it's between two consenting adults, you know, it's none of my business.
No, two or three or four consenting adults.
Well, whatever, you know, however far you want to take that.
In Charlie's case. But I consider him a friend of liberty and individual rights. I just wish I had his ear. I wish I had some of his financial support or resources to do my TV, my cable show that I would like to do with music too, and be a libertarian Bill Maher, if you will. In fact, I could use a co-producer or someone to help me do this so I could focus on the things I need to do, which are research and my wit, so I can deliver this sort of thing, because one person can't do it all. So I could use a co-producer or somebody to help, you know, this sort of thing.
Sure, you could be the anti-Bill Maher.
Yeah, well, I like his format, and I would interview, you know, I would copy, and I'd say, yeah, I'm copying Bill's format, in a sense, although I'm smarter than Bill is, and I'd throw that in his face, because he's just another gatekeeper. He's a gatekeeper for the right, as is Larry McDonald. Is that O'Donnell? What's his name? Lawrence McDonald, Larry McDonald.
Oh, I don't know.
Another liberal on MSN, and that jerkette, Rachel Maddow, and Chrissy Matthews. You know, they're just gatekeepers for the left, as is Maher. And, you know, talk radio, Fox News, they're gatekeepers for the right. And I'm not, as you can see by my wonderful bio, which I wrote, thank you very much. I can't be bought, and I'm going to speak truth to power. Plus, I have that mixed in with that Howard Stern kind of stuff and the Bill Maher sort of humor, but not a whining liberal, someone who has, you know, reasoned, rationally integrated philosophy, to quote Rand there, as to how to fix things, including economics and, you know, social policy, you know, which is, of course, articulated in my secession solution.
Yeah. Well, you've got facts and history on your side. You know, you've got a full book full of, you know, truths and, you know, the historical revisionism going on there, as opposed to Bill, who's got a lot of talking points and a lot of money behind him from the left coast.
Well,
he's got to work to his paymasters, you know, who was ever paying him. He has to work to that side of the aisle.
His talking points aren't even all that great. You know, it's the same whining stuff, you know, his religion of global warming. I would like to, climate change, I would like to have some, I would stage a sort of a debate between me. You remember how Conan would have, he had guests on, like President Clinton would show up and there'd be, Clinton's face on a screen behind him with real lips moving.
Right.
You know, you could do that with any character. Well, I would love to do that with Hannity and Limbaugh, Michael Savage, you know, this whole crowd, Mark Levine, the supposed great one, just another shill for Israel and the military-industrial complex, you know, as is McCain, and McCain's puppet master, Joe Lieberman, Israel's number one senator.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, yeah, I, of course, I rail against Zionism whenever I can. And the Jewish lobby, the non-existent Jewish lobby, AIPAC, which I have, renamed as the American Israeli Parasites Against the Constitution.
Woo-hoo. Okay. Yeah.
Now, for example, yeah. I would like to, I mean, if I had the magic wand, for example, or I had the ability, or had the, you know, if it was offered to me, based on what I would like to think that I know, I could step into Mubarak's place, or even Gaddafi's. I don't want to be shot. I don't want to be killed. But I could administer the country that within a year or two, it'd probably be quite thriving, because I'm not interested in ripping people off. And I would kick the foreign aid out. I would kick the CIA out. I would welcome foreign investment. I would turn those countries into a sort of a Hong Kong, a trade, you know, with trade.
Sure. I'm sure most of the people would like it that way. I mean,
trade, tourism. How about more desalinization plants so they could maybe grow more, you know, of their own food? Those sort of things. Take more advantage of the Nile for irrigation. Those sort of things. You know, just a safe place to live. I don't even need any. Just give me food and medical care. I'll be happy. But I could, you know, just implement these. Sound economics, and I keep going back to three words: liberty, property, and peace. And those are three big tenets that many things, you know, fit within. But it really comes down to those things: liberty, property, and peace. I don't put equality in there. I mean, equality. I don't care about equality. I'd rather be. I'm into being an individual. I believe in equal rights before the law. But apart from that, we're not equal.
No, nobody is. Everybody
that's
has
true.
Different wants and desires. I mean, that destroys equality right there.
Right, right.
If we're all equal, we're all the same. I mean, what are we, a bunch of automatons running around, all thinking the same thing, all wanting the same thing, all ready to settle for what's handed to us?
Are you talking about talk radio and Fox News now?
How did you know?
Was that a thinly veiled reference to them?
Just a little. I wasn't really thinking about that, but yeah, you could say that.
I did say that because it's
show.
Because it's my show.
Okay, PK, you got it.
Thank you. And what I like about having my show is, and I've mentioned this before, is I don't. Nobody can fire me. I think the only way this network would fire me if I constantly advocated violence and hatred and genocide, and I never do that. And they'd have every right to for that, but. You know, it never goes there. It's always a criticism. It's an expose on power. I criticize Zionism and Israel. And, of course, you've got the Bush, Rockefeller, Morgan wing. You know, they're in league with the global Zionism. That's how I see it.
Okay.
You know, and I've been really enjoying these Barnes reviews. I'll have to fax you some of these. These Barnes, the historian Elmer Barnes I've become a big fan of. He supported World War I at the time. Then he stepped back and he did a lot of research, and you realize that you know, Germany really got screwed in all this. And
oh, you're not kidding.
Even in World War II, actually, when I stepped back, and you know, of course, when you talk like this, oh, you're a Nazi.
Well, no.
Not a Nazi. If anything, what I've learned is,
if things are only so easy, so simple.
Yeah, but yeah. In Israel too, what I've learned is that Jewish supremacism is almost a carbon copy of a so-called Nazi supremacism or the Nuremberg Laws. When I see they interchange in a lot of ways, and maybe it's because you had some wealthy Zionists behind the scenes sort of collaborating with Hitler because they wanted to set up Palestine as their own state, from, you know, which they would, you know, as the so-called conspiracy goes to as a seat of world government for global Zionism. And when you consider the fact that they've got all these nukes, much of which they stole from the U.S., I think in the 50s or early 60s, Zionists or Mossad, they stole uranium or something. I think it was stored in Pennsylvania. They were involved in this. And, of course, they had France building their nukes for them. They had, you know, deals with France. So now they're sitting on top of all these nukes, and they could hit Russia, China, they could hit Europe. They're the problem.
Ooh. Well, you know, the funny thing is I kind of look at it as they're the guardians of the oil fields. It's a different viewpoint. This is my own little thing off the top of my head.
No, I don't see it as that. I see them as they could be the destroyers of the oil fields and
that too.
And they'll take because they think if they're going to go down, we'll take others with us because of the Holocaust, which is the constant excuse they use to do whatever they want.
Yeah, you know what? You know what's killing me? I was thinking about this. I always sit around. And I wonder. You know, you hear about World War II all the time.
It's of course,
constantly drummed into our heads. What happened in World War II? Let's talk about the Holocaust. How often is there something come up? But World War I is like the forgotten war. It was the Great War. That's it. And it's forgotten. World War II, everything is focused on World War II.
Actually, your terminology.
You talk about Wilson and how he got us into World War I, how the mess was, how World War I started, how Churchill had a hard-on for the Germans. He wanted to completely destroy them and wipe them out before the war ever started.
Yeah, he lobbied behind the scenes. But the Forgotten War, you used the wrong term, because the Forgotten War, the Korean War, is referred to as the Forgotten War.
Oh, okay.
World War One, yes. World War One to me is much more horrific and scary than World War Two as far as battlefields go.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
World War One was, woo!
Yeah.
You know, it was the Civil War on steroids, because they had some trenches and they fought behind some things in the Civil War, but World War One with its elaborate trenches, and just to gain, you know, a mile or two of, ground that they would take from each other, you know, at the expense of millions who died, destroyed property. The Zionists and the Jewish bankers, German bankers, and their Zionist cohorts, they wanted Palestine, and they knew that if Germany won, they wouldn't get Palestine because it was in league with Turkey was in league with Germany. So they went to the Brits. They went to the British, these powerful Zionists, and said, look, we'll bring the U.S. in on your side. You can still win this war. We'll bring the U.S. in on your side, but you've got to give us Palestine after the war. So that's what this went to. This started before the so-called Holocaust. This happened around, Theodor Herzl, which the Zionists have up in Israel when they, seize power in 47, 48. You see him, huge pictures of him on the wall behind the speakers. That is not PA speakers, it's human speakers. And on each side of him is a huge flag with, the Tsar David in it. And here you have this atheist, Theodor Herzl, who was the founder of modern-day Zionism, died in 1904. So it shows you once again that Zionism is atheistic. And, of course, Israel was founded by socialist, communist, atheist, Zionist Jews. As I've said before, I put it in a nutshell, and I think this is very clever how I've worded this, if I may say so myself, and I have because it's my show. Anyway.
Okay.
God gave us this land, shouted the atheist, Zionist Jews. Now, I myself am a non-militant atheist, So okay. I have more cred as far as speaking on this, and I especially see the hypocrisy of it. It'd be like me going to Israel and saying, God gave us this land. God gave me this land. Well, if you don't even believe in God, how can you say that God gave you the land? Because it was part of a big scam, which goes back to how the powerful Zionists and German bankers of the Rothschild, Warburg, that whole clique, they were able to help bring the U.S. in to World War One by getting a promise to the Balfour Declaration that Britain would colonize Palestine for the Zionists. And regular rank-and-file Jews have suffered a lot because of this. And I'm pretty much convinced that this is one of the reasons where when I would hear that Hitler said that Jews stabbed Germany in the back. Well, it was certain Zionists that stabbed Germany in the back.
Okay, yeah.
And prior to right after World War One, Germany, and you don't hear about this, you hear about Hitler, condemning the communists and, leftists and all this and that. Well, Germany was faced with violent communist attempt to overthrow the Weimar Republic and institute a Marxist government. So, yes, there was a lot of this going on and a lot of things that upset Germans, and which was fueled by the Nazis, was that a lot of now it's not all the Jews, but there were prominent ones who were in control of in Germany of the banks, of the media, newspapers, you know, theater, pornography. And there was also a lot written about by Jewish authors, be they atheist Jews or whatnot, of criticizing, Christianity. So they did a lot of things to annoy the German people, because otherwise Jews had it pretty good in Germany. They were prosperous. But, you know, there had to be things that pissed these people off. Well, rank-and-file Germans, just like there are that upset the Palestinians. But I wasn't taught that in history. You know, thank goodness for revisionism, that's objective revisionism, which exposes a lot of this.
Sure. And there were plenty of books and plenty of pamphlets and magazines of the day that exposed all of this stuff. It's all out there. It's just never talked about.
Right. Well, and the Zionists have tried to hide all this. Now, what's happening, thanks to the Internet, there's a lot more information out there, and Zionism's got its back against the wall, thank goodness, because in this country, Abe Foxman, the head of the ADL, which I would call the Anti-Disagreement League, or the Anti-Dissent League, or the Anti-Debate League instead of the Anti-Defamation League, you have Abe Foxman and the SPLC, the Southern Poverty – was it the Southern Poverty Leadership Conference? I forget what legal.
Right.
It's heavily occupied by Jewish lawyers and whatnot. You know, race baiters, anti-Semitism baiters. So, in other words, Abe Foxman and the SPLC, they are the Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton of anti-Semitism or Jews. That's what their role is. That's what they do. And they've got multi-million dollar budgets.
Oh, yeah. They got the backing for days, for years.
Oh, yeah. And the intimidation. I mean, I would love to confront those guys. I mean, I'm ready. I'm waiting for my shot. That's why I want my show. I'm basically a nobody, but I think I could be quite devastating in terms of wit, humor, criticism and knowledge with go up against Bill Maher or any of this crowd, because I'm blunt and to the point and concise. That's what I've been working on. Because if you only have a quick segment for a sound bite, so that's what I'm focused on.
Yeah, you know, speaking of all this, you know, the Zionist and the anti-Semitic stuff. Do you know that there was an article written about Charlie Sheen? I can't remember who the writer was. But there was a snip thrown into the article that he may have made an anti-Semitic remark to the producer, too.
I don't know about that. I guess you referred to him as a maggot, but he
called him by his name.
He used his Jewish name.
So? Maybe exactly. That's how he talks to him.
And something I read that also, that Charlie Sheen's name is not Charlie Sheen. It's a Hispanic name. I think he's got Mexican background. Estevez. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so what, you know, I'm PK. I don't care what they call me. It's what you answer to. I'm waiting for my shot. I would love to engage in battle, intellectual battle with this crowd, you know, because not only does Sean Hannity have a stick up his butt, but he is so full of apple pie and Chevrolet that he can't think straight.
Oh, he's a pundit. He's a pundit for the government.
I wrote that brilliant line, by the way.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
I wrote that brilliant description of him.
That he's full of apple pie and Chevrolet?
Not only does he have a stick up his butt, but he's so Chevrolet that he can't think straight.
Oh, yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that.
But he's a shill for the military-industrial complex and his Zionist masters. He goes after anybody that criticizes Israel. You know, that's that whole mindset. They've tried to make it so that any criticism of Israel or Zionism or Jewish power is automatically anti-Semitism. Well, you know, that's BS. Right. Thank goodness Helen Thomas has been speaking out. I saw some of other clips of her on YouTube about this. And, you know, I guess since she's 90 or whatever, I guess she figures now she can, you know, talk about it. And she said, I'm a Semite. Well, she is Semitic. These white Jews are not Semites.
Yeah, they aren't.
They're from Eastern Europe, Germany, Poland.
Russia.
They're Khazars. Yeah, they have the Khazar background, which I think I've just explained before. They're not the Semite tribe. They're not the Semitic people of the Bible. The real Semites
not called
Hebrews. Are the Arabs.
They don't call themselves Hebrews.
Right, they're not. They're not the classic Hebrews. In fact, if they were really the Bible Jews or real Hebrews, they would probably look more like the darker-skinned Arab people, those Semitic people.
The real true Semitics from the Fertile Crescent.
Yes.
As I understand history.
Now, I realize that everything I've said now is all based upon hatred and killing people.
don't start a war, PK.
Say what?
I said, don't start a war, PK. No violence around here, okay?
Yeah. That's how the media likes to portray things. The pro-Zionist media, which is heavily controlled by Zionist Jews, American Jews, as our Hollywood. Now, something else I've learned recently, and here's an example of it, although this is a less tragic example of it. You had a rabbi, I believe it was in Haifa, Israel, northern Israel near the coast. See, I know geography, and I'm an American. How astounding is that? Anyway, he said, this is last year, that, you know, Israeli Arabs should not be allowed to live there, and Jewish landlords should not rent to Arab tenants. Now, an elderly Holocaust survivor, you know, has spoken out against that. They were down on him because he rented to some Israeli Arabs, and he talked about how ridiculous it is. But my point is, just as there are these imams talking, you know, spewing their hatred in the mosques, probably before that, there is some very bad stuff being said by rabbis, racist, Jewish supremacist sort of stuff, and they speak to their flocks in synagogue, not unlike the Haggis do and the you know, the Christian Zionists or the preachers, and they have instilled more of this chosen people mentality that we're special. They've given out a lot of toxic intellectual garbage, whether it be about Palestinians or you know, Zionist view of the world, this sort of thing. So there's a lot of bad stuff coming from rabbis, especially the Shabbat. Oh, what's that term? There's a certain bunch that has offices through pretty much most of the world, a lot of the world, and it's all under the radar, but they're spewing a lot of racist stuff that doesn't, they don't get called on it.
Yeah, I mean, like being called a goyim.
Which is actually a disrespectful word. I think it means pig or dog.
Shiksa,
which they refer to, you know, Gentile girls as shiksa, which I think is sort of an unclean kind of a non-desirable woman. So, you know, I reject all that as a bunch of nonsensical Jewish supremacist, racist, you know, elitist crap. This comes from a lot of the Zionists. And it probably also comes from more of the Reformed Jews, as I understand it. So I keep studying this and trying to learn more about it, because most of the emphasis...
Is that kind of like a Reformed Christian, except on the other side of the wall?
Possibly. But, of course, most of, you know, a lot of what is going on is, you know, everybody's ganging up on the Muslims and their practices. Well, you know, they do a lot of things I don't like, I don't agree with, but I tell you what, getting rid of the burqa or changing the rights of their women is not worth the life of one American. It's not worth one American death.
It's like any country. They have to fight for their own independence.
Unless the American deaths are Bill Kristol and the rest of the neocons. And a lot of these neocons, which I continue to mention, I don't know for sure, but I would bet your life on it, Andrew, that at one time they have now and or have had dual Israeli-U.S. citizenship. And that is how they keep their boot on America's neck, with the Zionist control and the supreme power of the Israeli lobby that has a lot to do with who gets elected. Another congressman I like, there's very few, but one who speaks truth to power, which I'm pretty much a fan of, is Jim Traficant from Ohio.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah, and he was in jail recently. He got out last year, I think, or 2 years ago for, what was it? They said he took bribes or something, but, you know, he fell askew with the Israeli lobby, and he helped a so-called prison camp guy get out of a former German camp guard who was accused of. He helped him win his freedom and escorted him home from Israel. So Traficant talks about this, although he cuts Israel more slack. I cut them no slack. I'm for an immediate arms embargo, especially on Israel. And the federal government through their tax-subsidized military-industrial complex, have given – the world is awash in weapons. We don't need to be providing more countries with more weapons that end up getting used against their neighbors or us. I mean, you know, I'm all for defense, but it's just so way beyond what these other countries need, and it's sucking valuable investment capital away from other consumer goods and services that need to be produced.
Sure, I couldn't agree with you more, but it, you know, it's all about the money.
Well, yeah.
All about the money and the power. That's what it's about.
I'm all for capitalism, if true free market capitalism. I'm against crony capitalism, but I've arrived at a lot of my views as a fact that, excuse me, I consider myself a sort of a self-taught free market economist. So that gives me quite a worldview and scope of a socio-economic solutions and policies for, you know, the world. I don't mean in terms of world government. I mean that the principles that I espouse, which I've learned mainly from standing on the shoulders of giants, in addition to what I've added to it, are the ways to govern, are the ways to have efficiency in government and a thriving, healthy private sector.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so that's where I'm coming from. And I would love to see revolution in this country, a peaceful revolution where people just refuse to pay a lot of the taxes or cooperate with what's going on, you know. And
a lot of people aren't doing that anymore. They aren't cooperating. You know what's happening? A huge portion of the population, the affluent population, is leaving the country.
There's a lot of expats going on.
Expats, somewhere between 300,000 and 350,000 a year are leaving. I think it's actually moving faster now.
Well,
quite a few are renouncing citizenship as well.
Well, I don't know that I'd want to do that, but unfortunately, I don't speak, you know, especially Spanish. But I could live outside the country comfortably. Because I understand other cultures and other people, and
sure.
I'm often quite more comfortable with conversation of people from foreign countries. Now, you've traveled, so you have more of an insight on things. But I love Europe. I like South America. Now, these countries, I don't like the socialism or, you know, the collectivism or that sort of stuff that they have. But, you know, there's a lot of good things that they have, too, and that's what expats see about it. Costa Rica, the most stable country in Central America, has like 30,000 or 40,000 Yanks living down there. I don't know if they live full time, but you know, you can still buy things more less expensive down there. They're nice people. They disbanded their military, I think, after World War II. They realized that they didn't really need one, so they saved all that.
And it's a drag on the economy. Yeah.
And pretty Latin women, but they have a fairly healthy economy, and they have peace with their neighbors. You know, they don't have coups. They don't have all this kind of stuff.
No, it's the same in Belize. It's the same in Panama these days. It's the same in Nicaragua now. Low taxes, low cost of living, peaceful living conditions.
Yeah, I'm all for that.
Easy to start a business.
Well, you know, those conditions could exist in this country. They did. This country was formerly the land of free enterprise, supposedly. Well, it's not taught. Teachers don't teach it. Teachers should be at the forefront of free enterprise by having private schools everywhere, especially in poor neighborhoods.
Definitely.
Free of government control and, intervention. Strip malls with in fact, where my State Farm office used to be in a strip mall near my home is now a math school, which I think is great. I mean, there could be small schools like this everywhere.
Everywhere.
Now, I know that your daughter goes to Montessori schools.
Right.
And she seems she still has friends that she plays with. She'll do fine socially, but you know, she'll be a lot probably better educated than most.
She makes friends wherever she goes. She has no problem fitting with anybody, talking. She speaks clear. Her math skills are phenomenal. Her English skills are great. What can I say?
You know, what I can say about your daughter is that, and not only that, she's very pretty. She's very bright. She's a lovely young lady. What is she? Is she 9 now? 11? How old is she?
Soon to be 12.
Okay, soon to be 12. Now, she's all these things, and I know her parents, yet I don't see the connection. But, you know, that's another story.
You've had a little problem seeing it sometimes. So I understand. The age gets to you at times. So stuff.
Well, it's not the age. It's that your daughter's very bright and pretty, and I know her parents. I just don't see the connection. But anyway, I'm glad that she goes to Montessori schools and gets some homeschooling in addition to that, I think. So she's going to turn out great. There needs to be more kids like this. But she'll be growing up as sort of a diamond in a goat's ass, because she'll be amongst all these other kids who weren't schooled like her. So she'll either be a future leader. Of course, I don't know what the future holds for her generation. I mean, that's always said, but in this country, job opportunities and
not much at this point.
You know, and a lot of Latin folks want to reclaim the Southwest. Well, you know, I understand that because of the stupid war that James K. Polk got this country in 1845, the Mexican-American War, where the U.S. confiscated land that belonged to Mexico. So when they say the border crossed us, I understand, you know, how they just want to take it back, just mainly by just population.
Sure. Reconquista. Raza,
I mean, I know where they're coming from. I don't like it. I think they're rather racist and elitist, but they have a point about what U.S. imperialism brought. Now, one could say, well, Mexican imperialism, you know, post-Spain, interfered with Indians and other people's rights too. But anyway, the Southwest is facing that. So I think it's going to be a tough road to hoe for today's young people. And the debt, where are they going to be debt-wise? You know?
Oh, well, it's going to have to be repudiated. Eventually, they're just not going to make the payment, or it's going to be inflated away, which is where we're headed right now, massive inflation.
When your daughter is 18 or 20 and in school or out of school and she's working, how much are things going to cost due to inflation, due to the debt? That's a scary thing. That's what I like to see people. You talk about all this spending and all this, you know, this ridiculous government out of control. What about the debt? What about your children and your grandchildren? And then people start to look within more and say, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't be so grasping and demanding. Maybe we need to step back and look at what's going on, you know, with entitlements, with the military. So many people must think that the military is sacred and they can't be cut. And they always try to throw our troops out there. I mean, the troops should be paid more. They should have a lot more care and a much better pay. And first of all, they shouldn't be lied to and stretched so thin. And they shouldn't be fighting proxy wars for Israel.
Right. And if it was a private business, the mantra would be, like in every other private business, no one is indispensable. Anything can be cut at any time to keep it going.
Exactly.
If there was a bottom line. But there isn't one.
Yeah. And that needs to be taught. I mean, I'm anti-union, but I'm pro-employee. And, I don't care. I'm not much of a fan of that Wisconsin governor for other reasons. And plus, he's got the Koch brothers in there. And they funded Cato, and they don't like Murray Rothbard. They don't like the Mises Institute. They're friendly with the neocons. They might as well be Rockefellers, you know. So they're big money, but they're really not putting it where true free enterprise is. So, that is a problem that I see with that whole deal. But anyway, Andy, I'd like to thank you for being back here at Third Stream View, where we can chop away at things, say our say, without being shut off by Sean. Sean, I got to tell you something. I got to tell you something. Now, you know, because I listen to these guys, so that's how I, you know, can do sort of impressions of them, or I know what they're going to say, basically, because talk radio and Fox News, they sort of, you know, and the people who listen to them, they sort of think in lockstep. You know, that's how they function. So as I wrap things up here, thanks again, Andy. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, PK.
And I'd like to say to my multitude of fans that thank you for listening here at Third Stream View on bbsradio.com every Monday evening, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 Central, and 12 a.m. Eastern, where we put the libertarian slant on things and we talk fearlessly about the socio-economic events of the day and my take on solutions that need to be done. So until next Monday, everybody take care and thank you for listening.